Welcome into episode 232 of the Sources Say Podcast, your go-to Kentucky basketball and recruiting podcast on the growing KSR Podcast Network. Sources Say is, as always, presented by our good friends at Justice Dental. Visit one of their two Lexington locations. That's on Blazer Parkway and Wellington Way by scheduling an appointment online at justicedental.com or by calling 859-543-0700. You can even send a text message to one of their friendly team members at the same number to ask a question or make an appointment. Now is a great time to schedule your dental cleaning. Dr. Thompson, Dr. Justice, and their team strive to provide you with good oral health and a comfortable environment. The Justice Dental team looks forward to seeing you soon. I am your host, Jack Pilgrim of Kentucky Sports Radio. Very happy to be joined once again by Zach Gagan, our trusty basketball recruiting reporter, beat writer, all of those things. We go hand in hand on the Kentucky basketball beat, and we are ready to break down another Kentucky basketball win. Zach, how the heck are you?
I am doing the heck good, Jack. Three wins in a row for the Cats. I think we're going to talk about some season turnaround stuff today, but no two big teasers. No, we're not tease too much here, even though most of it's all on the side of the screen there. But yeah, I'm doing great, Jack. It's been a good start to the week, so no complaints over here in I won't give away my address, but nearby Kentucky's campus.
Well, as you said, three straight wins for the Kentucky Wildcats. How about a streak? We have not had a streak since December 10th. Is that not crazy for Kentucky basketball to go over a full month without a streak of wins for the basketball team? So very, very glad that I think it's been 42 days to be exact since that happened. Kentucky defeats the Fighting Aggies of Texas A&M 76-67. Again, another hard-fought victory. It was one that kind of went against the script from the previous win when Kentucky beat Georgia in an absolute dominant effort for Oscar Tshiebwe there in the second half. They beat them in a different way, but yet another step forward for a program that absolutely needed one. Zach, some of your takeaways a couple days after the win, you know, let that thing marinate a little bit. How are you feeling about the win a couple days later now?
Well, that's actually where you started is where I'd like to start, with Kentucky being able to win games in different ways. We met with Chin Coleman today for our Monday morning press conference, and that was one of the big things that he said. I kind of asked, you know, it feels like y'all are – if you need to hit a bunch of threes, you can. If you need to hit a bunch of free throws, you can. If you need to live and die by Oscar, you can, and they're winning games. So, you know, I'm looking here, and I've actually got a nice article coming out on KSR, a great website, probably here in about 50 minutes, it says, kind of talking about what I'm about to explain here, but – Tennessee, Kentucky scores 63 points. Georgia, they score 85. Texas A&M, they score 76. Kentucky is proving right now that they can win games no matter what the other team is throwing at them. If they want to be physical and grind the game down to a halt like they did against Tennessee, Kentucky is going to find ways to score. If they want to do it like the Georgia route, where Georgia just wants to, you know, essentially do the same thing, put Kentucky at the line a bunch of times and live, you know, if they want to let Oscar beat them, you know, Kentucky can win with that as well. Or they can win like we saw a couple nights ago, where if the other team is going to let Kentucky jack up 32 threes, a record since 2011, they will gladly do it and they will gladly win. And one of the things that Chin was talking about today is, you know, they don't need a couple of guys to be great. You know, they don't need to have a 37-24 game from Oscar every single night. They just need everyone to be good. And you have a team that goes 7 or 8 deep where when those players are all good, Kentucky is going to be really, really hard to beat, because that top eight is just – it's kind of unmatched across the country in terms of overall talent. It's just a matter of now getting everyone in the right headspace, finding the chemistry that they're looking for, figuring out rotations, which we'll talk about here shortly. So I think Kentucky's just proving right now that they can – it doesn't matter what the – like I said, the other team can throw out whatever they want, the other game plan. Kentucky's figuring out ways. Sometimes it takes a little bit longer than you might like. You know, they were down at half. And I feel like in all three of those wins, they were down at half. Correct me if I'm wrong on that. You know, Tennessee, they were ahead, right?
Yes.
But yeah. Still, same mindset. Kentucky figures it out around the last 10, 15, 12 minutes of the game. They're figuring out the other team's game plan. And, you know, you can chalk it up to a lack of the other team adjusting, or you can chalk it up to Kentucky adjusting, you know, properly. But either way, it's leading to wins.
And I think that was the biggest frustration early on in the year, and why Kentucky fans were so upset with how the results were going and the losses that were coming from them, is – you saw individual efforts and standout performances for all of Kentucky's rotation players. We've seen, you know, Cason Wallace have his breakthrough performances. Oscar Tshiebwe is Oscar Tshiebwe. Even Jacob Toppin has, you know, LSU, Louisville, you know, we saw him earlier on in the year, a couple games where he exploded. Antonio Reeves, now we've seen him with a 23-point game, a couple, you know, flirting with that 20-point line. You know, Xavier Wheeler is a guy who has, you know, hit that mark on various occasions. C.J. Frederick, we're waiting for that kind of explosion, but he's been consistent and has shown that he's been able to knock down shots. You've seen all of them do those things in individual efforts, but to put them all together at the same time just has not been happening. And that's been part of the issue with this team, is that you just can't get, you know, three or four or five of them to put together that individual performance together. It's always been one guy kind of standing out and everybody else not living up to their expectations. And that's been the frustrating part. And I think for the first time, and especially in this stretch, second half against Georgia was the best I've seen them play. But really, the entire Texas A&M game was like, all right, that's where you can kind of start seeing the vision. You can see where the second half against Georgia and then the entire Texas A&M game, really the last 16 minutes, second half of both games, you saw the vision of, okay, you can have Oscar down low dominating the way that he is. You have shooters on the outside. If you have, and we'll get to our basketball Benny lineup and the efficiency behind those, but if you have all of those pieces working together and doing what they're supposed to be doing and living up to their capabilities, then this team, you can kind of start thinking big again. Texas A&M was the first time, that second half stretch was the first time in, I mean, shoot, since probably the beginning of the year, where I kind of sat back and said, okay, now we can start thinking, what exactly is this team? What is this team's tournament ceiling? How far can they get, you know, those type of big picture thoughts that were definitely not there. I mean, we were talking 2 weeks ago why this team wasn't going to make the NCAA tournament. So the fact that we're here now is a huge step in the right direction. It's not a finished product. They still have a lot of work to be done. But the last two second halves, I think, are kind of the vision long term. And we talked about the 3-point shooting, and we definitely need to address that. Kentucky goes 11 for 32 from three. You have Antonio Reeves exploding for 23 points, 5 of 11 shooting. C.J. Frederick goes 2 for 10. Kaysen Wallace goes 1 for 7. You at least got Chris Livingston and Jacob Toppin combining for 3, but not a super efficient game, but they still go 34%. That kind of had you thinking, okay, they're getting open shots, they're getting open looks. If they make 4 more of them, then that turns a 9-point win into a, you know, 16-to-20-point win, and now we're talking a completely different mindset and all that, and the shots are there. You can see the vision with that moving forward. So just what did that individual stat, 11 for 32, how they were getting the shots, the open looks that they were getting, and yeah, they were missing, but just the shooters that were on the floor to be able to hit those shots in the total number, how did that kind of change your mindset moving forward of what this team can be?
Well, kind of like I was saying, you know, it proves that they can win games if that's what they need to do. I don't know if that'll ever happen again this season, where Kentucky takes 32 threes, just because at least 30 of those 32 threes where no one was within maybe, you know, a foot and a half of a guy. Like, they were just letting C.J. Frederick fire off shots. That was their, you know, that was their defense by design. Their design was the second before the ball is even going to Oscar, the second the entry pass is like being directed, they were collapsing on him, and that was opening up the weak side. And it was just a lot of really good ball movement, which is honestly, I think that's the bigger takeaway, is that Oscar learned that all I got to do is just make the easy pass. Because if I make the easy pass, the next guy just has to make the easy pass. And Jacob Toppin was a guy who did a really good job of making that secondary hockey pass, you know, whether it was going to Oscar or from Oscar. So I think, I don't know if they'll shoot 32 threes again. I think the previous high before that was about 25, and that was kind of earlier in the season against one of the batter teams. So it's definitely – it shows that they are willing to take those shots. I think that's a bigger thing is, you know, even if C.J. Frederick is going 2 for 10 and Wallace is 1 for 7, those guys are still going to shoot threes. 32 is a lot. I don't know. Like you said, if that 34.5% number is closer to 38, you know, that's probably an extra 2 made threes. And that's closer to where Kentucky's averages on the season. And this game is, you know, a 15-point win, and it doesn't feel like it was as close as it maybe felt like towards the end. So definitely, you know, it's a positive. I wouldn't be shocked if Kentucky only shoots 12 threes, you know, against Vanderbilt, though, and that's just kind of how the game works out. So it's just a matter of how it's going to play out during the game. I don't think that Kentucky's going to sit there and rely on shooting 20-plus threes a game. But knowing that they have that in their bag now and they can do that. I don't think many of us will expect Wallace and CJ Frederick to combine to go 3 for 17 from three moving forward. So you just like Chin was saying, not everyone has to be perfect or great, but those guys had to be good. And if CJ hits one more three, and if Kaysen hits one more three, that game looks a lot different.
And I think the style of play, I think how Georgia played Oscar and how Texas A&M played Oscar and how the rest of the team kind of revolved around just those game plans. I think that's also kind of something that kind of I think is turning the college basketball world's head around and going, okay, all right, if you double Oscar and try to shut him down like Texas A&M did, then we're going to be leaving CJ Frederick and Antonio Reeves wide open on the outside. You're going to leave Kaysen Wallace wide open on the outside. Is that necessarily a smart decision? And then if you want to, if that's how it unfolds, you're going to have those guys getting open looks, and then they're going to have to guard those guys on the outside. And then you're going to have, Oscar Tshiebwe on an island by himself down low. That game in these last two games, I see a Tennessee at home last season, the entire team firing on all cylinders game coming up. I truly believe that we got to see Oscar kind of unleash the beast and go, okay, yeah, forget UCLA, forget how Alabama played me where I was so bad, I was played off the floor, those sorts of things, and then forget the inefficient shooting nights with the other star shooters. If they can, like you said, they can both just live up to their expectations, not be superstars, but just kind of play well enough, there's so much talent around them that I just don't see how there's not going to be one game that you're going to get CJ hitting, four threes, or Antonio Reeves hitting three or four, and Kaysen hitting a couple, and then Oscar going for, even if he goes for 15 and 15 or something like that. I think that is the making of a 100-point game and a win by 20-ish points or whatever. And I think that's when you start thinking, okay, now we can start getting back to the preseason hype expectations of what this team can be. And that's what, this team is still there. Nothing has changed about the pieces and how what this team's potential could be. It's always been about how they get put together and be used. And now we're seeing the vision. And now is when you can kind of start thinking, all right, this is what this team can be. And I will add, we were talking about CJ Frederick. I was told that he still has a splint on his shooting hand right now. And he's struggling catching passes and, just kind of finding his touch on his release on shots. So I think that's about to come off here very, very soon. And once that happens, I think we're going to start seeing a little bit more consistent shooting nights out of him. So 2 for 10, he's just trying to get that thing up and take open shots as they come. And I have a pretty solid feeling that once that splint gets taken off his hand, then we can start kind of playing with fire a little bit and get really excited about what this team can be. The 3-point shooting numbers, I don't think they're going to be taking 32 threes in a game, but I also don't think Oscar is only going to shoot 5 shots in a game and be limited to 7 points. So I think moving forward, we'll find a happy medium, and that happy medium is a pretty darn scary thing to think about. A big reason why all of this is working together so well, Zach, is what we've been kind of stressing on this show since the beginning of the season. The basketball Benny lineup is working. We have the numbers in front of us. The data is starting to make a lot more sense and back up what the eye test has been telling us for a while now. Plus 15 in the win at Tennessee, plus 13 in the win against Georgia, and then plus 14 in the possessions against Texas A&M. I think it's a total of 24 possessions, 22 possessions, 27 possessions, 70-ish possessions now combined. For the basketball Benny lineup, that is Kaysen Wallace, Antonio Reeves, CJ Frederick, Jacob Toppin, and Oscar Tshiebwe. Cal has found his lineup, and it's the one that we've been begging for from the beginning. But how has that lineup kind of changed the trajectory of this season, Zach, and what your expectations were 2 weeks ago versus what they are right now?
Well, the easy answer is it just spaces the floor. It just opens up shots and allows guys, once Oscar gets into a mindset that he's not there just to put up shots every time, that he can maybe turn around and make some passes. It just opens things up for everyone in general. And it leads to things like 32 3-point shots. And, having those two type shooters out on the wings, even if they are shooting 2 for 10, guys are following CJ Frederick around like he's Klay Thompson. Mm-hmm. And Antonio Reeves has a bit more space to operate when he's trying to shoot that tough runner in the lane. Like just that extra, few inches of space that you might get by having to spread the floor a little bit more just helps so much when guys are trying to get off tough shots. So it's, It's what we've been asking for. Something I noticed is we haven't seen that same lineup with Savir inserted instead of Kaysen. So that's, you know, that's something that I think we should also consider, that, you know, maybe put Savir in a situation like that and he can also thrive. Obviously, it's working for Kaysen because he can step outside and shoot, but a lot of Savir's threes come off, you know, the offensive rebounds anyways, and he's going to be open for those. So in general, that five-man lineup is clearly working. I think you can even do a situation where you switch out Oscar in foul trouble and put in Lance. I think we saw that in the last game at Texas A&M, where you can have Lance as your five in the, call it the mini basketball Benny lineup if you want to. And they'll still put up, they'll be able to produce, because Lance is still going to come in there and fight for a lot of rebounds. And, it, you know, obviously his offense isn't as good as Oscar's, but he's going to provide the same sort of toughness and fight on the glass that that lineup really needs, because they've got the scorers out there. That's not really what they need in that lineup. And Jacob's really coming along with how he's been doing his, sorry, my phone just went off there, so distract me for a second. Jacob's been doing really good in figuring out his playmaking and how he wants to fit into that lineup too. A little bit less of the, you know, let me just pull up and fade away from 15 feet. He's still doing that, but a little bit less of that and a little bit more of, well, let me just, instead of just turning around and shooting, let me pump fake and go to the rim. Mm-hmm. And that lane's a little bit more open as well, because you've got all those guys spaced on the court. And it's just, it's making life a lot easier for all those guys out there.
And I guess it brings up the very difficult question. You brought up Savir and you know, just how to utilize him, but just throwing some numbers at you. In SEC play this season, Zach, he is a Savir by himself is a minus 56 on the floor. He is scoring just 104.7 points per 100 possessions. So his offensive efficiency rating is 104.7, and he's allowing 127 points per 100 possessions. So general rule of thumb is if you're above 100 offensively, it's a good number. If you're below 100 defensively, it's a good number. So he's been average offensively and actually pretty bad defensively. And I think that's kind of been an argument from Kentucky fans, is that it hasn't been the offensive struggles for Savir. Like, yeah, you know, he's short and he's not the best shooter, and the spacing is worse when he's on the floor and teams are willing to give him open looks and all that. I get that point. But his biggest struggles as of late is the fact that he hasn't been good defensively. He's been getting beat in transition. You know, he's been the guard at 94 feet. I'm a dog and I'm going to be disruptive for the entire length of the floor. He has not been that guy. He's been letting guys go past him, and he's been kind of a train wreck in the half court guarding, you know, face up and letting guys pass him straight line drives to the basket. That's been a very genuine issue with this team. And you go back and look at the efficiency numbers for the basketball Benny lineup: 127 offense, 63.7 defense against Tennessee, 135 offense, 76.5 defense, and then Texas A&M 154.5 offensive efficiency rating, which is unbelievably good, and then 101.7, so average defensively, but still, when you're thriving that much offensively, you can afford to be just okay defensively. The numbers are, yeah, technically the sample size is still small. If you take, you know, typical starting five lineups for the rest of college basketball up to this point, it's, you know, 400-ish possessions overall, and we're talking 70-plus with this basketball Benny lineup. So those are a little bit different. But, I mean, goodness gracious, the analytics continue to stress how valuable this lineup is. And what do you do with Savir, Zach? That's my question. What do you do? Everybody says, you know, he needs to be the 15 to 20 to 25 minute game guy. I kind of see him as like a Davion Mintz type role. Why can he not be the spark plug, you know, energy guy? You know, Davion was beloved. Everybody loved him and supported him. I feel like it could be the same thing with Savir, but it's a lot easier said than done, I think, with Savir in this case.
Yeah, there's a lot of variables I think we need to take into account with some of the numbers with Savir, because the numbers that you just talked about, you know, we were discussing those ahead of time in our group chat with Steven, just kind of looking over them, you know, figuring out why Cal hasn't gone to it earlier and stuff like that. But, you know, if you just look at the non-conference games, you know, obviously a lot of bad teams in there, but the numbers are good for Savir. You know, everything's, you know, right where you'd want him to be and stuff like that. But then you dip into the SEC play, you've got seven games there, and the numbers are just against him. But at the same time, you've also, you know, the Alabama numbers skew everyone's. You know, everyone was a minus 20 in the box score against Alabama. You know, he didn't play against Tennessee. You know, if CJ has his injury, I think, and we're kind of taking that into account, I think we should with Xavier as well and his shoulder. You know, the last two games, he's only played a total of, what, 20 minutes or something like that. So it can be tough to get in rhythms. And I still think there's probably, like, I think those numbers are real, but I still think there's some, like, maybe some wiggle room that we should give to him. But, you know, the thing is, like, I said last week on our sort on the sorts to say that I think 25 minutes is perfect for Xavier. If I think he's perfect to come off the bench as the sixth man or even the seventh man or whatever, you know, I would prefer if Cal just started with the Reeves lineup, you know, Reeves instead of Chris, just because of how the slow starts have kind of continue to accumulate. And once Reeves comes in, the lineups or the score kind of corrects itself. Part of that might be UK kind of feeling out the game plan like they have been, it feels like, over the last few games. But when you're with Xavier, it's all going to be situational with him at this point, I think. Mm-hmm. Like, they can bring him off the bench as the sixth man, but they've got to put him in there with CJ and Antonio. Like, they can't put him in there with a lineup where you've got Chris Livingston, Lance Ware, and Oscar or something. Like, he can't be in a lineup like that because he's going to fail. And it's not because of, you know, his inability or his lack of a talent. It's just that lineup is impossible to play with when you're a guy who's 5'9" and wants to get to the rim and can't shoot. Like, that's just how it's going to be. It's going to make it, you know, those guys, those other three aren't going to be as quick defensively as well. So it'll put a little bit more weight on him at the point of attack. Like, he's just in a really tough spot. And the last thing you want is for a guy like him to just lose his confidence. I don't think that'll happen because we've talked with Xavier a bunch and he doesn't really seem like a guy that would just lose all of his confidence like that. But there's no doubt that, you know, that's going to impact his mind a little bit. And it was clear that, you know, when he doesn't want to play just 1 minute a second half. Like, he's been a starter for 3.5 years now. An SEC program, so he knows what he's doing. He knows how to play basketball, but he's going to have to, like, with just how this team is laid out, there's just not enough shooters. There's really not enough shooters to go around, and you need, like, you don't have a big stretch four or stretch five that can come in and really help. Like, if Xavier had a, like, I'm just thinking with CJ Frederick and his time in Iowa, like, he had the benefit of playing with a guy like Luka Garza. Luka Garza could set all threes all he wants. Like, you put Xavier in a pick and roll with a guy like that, and they're just going to make magic all night long. So it's just different with Oscar. Like, that's just not the case. Oscar can hit a 16-footer, but most of the time when he shoots 16-footers, we're like, why would you do that? Just take it inside. You know, he's got about a 40% hit rate or whatever it is on him, which is decent. So it's going to come down to a lot of situational stuff and kind of how he, Xavier himself, I guess, feels in those lineups. And, you know, where does Cal think that the best – you know, opportunity, is it going to be a game by game thing? Like, you know, if they're playing a team that really wants to slow things down and Cal doesn't want to do that because they think they can just outpace that team, then maybe you do throw in Xavier. But if you do that, I really think you got to have Reeves and CJ in on the wings, because if those two are out there, and then if even you've got Jacob or Chris at the four, that helps spread it even a little bit more. Because if there's just Oscar in the paint there, that's going to make things a lot easier for Xavier, whether it's going up for a shot or just dishing it off to him. When you've got all those other three or four defenders lurking outside of the paint instead of right inside of it.
Yeah. Connor Riggs says Wheeler has to play with shooters, a combo of Case and CJ and Reeves, number two big men. No two big men lineups with Wheeler. Completely agree. You know, like what we were talking about, I think Livingston is that guy. And MC says you need even more shooters on the floor with Wheeler, Livingston at the four, that Cal won't do.
I think we should get that in the bud right now. I don't think Chris is going to play a minute at the four the rest of the season. I mean, I would just be shocked at this point.
And I will say, I think it's because of Chris, man. Like, I genuinely just, you know, talking with people behind the scenes, and I genuinely think that the concern with Chris is that he wants to be ready for the NBA and prepare for the NBA. And I think he knows that he is not a four in the NBA. And even though it might, you know, allow him to produce more right now, I think in his mind it's like, well, what really does me scoring through contact in a kind of a back to the basket or a line drive to the basket score through a smaller defender, what does that show NBA teams right now? What does that mean for my long-term future? Yeah, it might make my box scores look good, but the style of play won't play me any closer to the league. I think he's really trying to drive. I think he would sacrifice playing time right now for opportunities at the three more so than, you know, playing at the four. And it sucks because I do think that he's that perfect fit, as we just saw him, you know, hit back-to-back threes and just kind of
Both passes
open there for a little bit.
Not wrong. Both those passes were from Wheeler too.
They were, and it's just one of those things. I think there's something more to Cal going to the podium and saying it's just not fair to him to play him at a position that he hasn't played, which is it's a lie. Like we have talked about that just till we were blue in the face. He has played the four before. He played it at Oak Hill. They ran a dribble drive where he was the fourth guard. And look, if it's about verbiage and it's about like just terminology, he doesn't want to be classified as a power forward, then lie. Just say you're a fourth guard. Just say we're running a new modernized four guard lineup and with one big on the floor and you're not a big. Oh, God forbid, Chris, of course you're not a big. Why would you be? But still put him at that fourth guard spot and let him do the same thing that a stretch four would do. I mean, just play him in that role. And if it comes down to the terminology and not want to be used that way, I get it. But I think that's hurt. I mean, I think that would help this team quite a bit if you need to have Xavier on the floor. And look, if you're looking for ways to get Xavier minutes, I think that's the way to do it. Say, all right, well, in order to make this happen, we have to have three other shooters. I still don't know if Chris is a shooter, but he can make shots. I think having CJ, Antonio, and Chris at the 3-4, at the 2-3-4 with Xavier at the 1 and Oscar at the 5, I think that's the lineup. You just can't have any Chris at the 3 lineups with him, with Jacob and Oscar, or Lance and Oscar, or Ugo and Oscar, or whatever, with Xavier on the floor, because he's unplayable. Like, if you're going to play Xavier, it has to be in situations that put him in positions to succeed. And up to this point, it has not been. And will it be? I don't know. I know. What was the exact quote from Chin today? What he said about Xavier and just kind of the need for him on the floor?
I don't remember the exact quote off the top of my head, but you know, it's kind of the same thing that some of the guys were saying last week. It's just, look, they're going to need him. He dictates the pace for us sometimes. And he even, if I remember, Chin kind of referenced it as like a situational type thing. Like, we're going to need him. Like, there's times where we're going to need that guy. So maybe that's how they're taking the approach as well. You know, I'm sure there's some tough conversations they have to have with him, but I think 20 to 25 minutes is definitely more of his sweet spot, because that he just can't play 35 minutes with how the roster is constructed. It's not going to work out, as we've seen. You know, we went over those numbers there, and I think there's still some, you know, maybe misleading variables in there, but I think overall that it's going to keep trending in that direction, in the direction of having the three guards in there. And then I think the forwards are almost interchangeable. I think having Jacob there is probably the best bet at the forward, but you can really interchange having Oscar, Lance, Jacob, Chris down there, however you want. And it's going to work, just because the floor is just the space, man. That's just what you need.
A lot of comments about Livingston's future. Daryl Williams says Livingston is gone regardless. Draft stock after this year. MC says it'll be interesting to see if Livingston goes pro or returns.
Won't get drafted.
Yeah, I said, do you think Chris is trying to leave after this year? I do. I will. Maybe I'm wrong, but I'm pretty confident that he came in on a 1-year plan and was very confident about himself and what his pro future is and who he is in the NBA. And he's one of those guys that I would be shocked if he comes back for a second year, no matter what. Maybe it's I transfer to go somewhere where I know I'm going to get the touches and I'm going to be used in a way that's going to put me in a better position to go pro, you know, the year after. Or maybe he's going to be, you know, take the Khalil Whitney route where he says, I'm going to bet on myself and go pro and fight, you know, find my own journey. Is that the smart decision? I don't think so. I think he would be really, really, I think it'd be very beneficial for him to come back for a second year, but I just don't know if that's, that was ever in the books for him. And you know, maybe I would love to be wrong. Maybe there's an epiphany, a change of heart. I honestly think that he might be better suited next year as a small ball four, where he would actually be kind of a fourth guard alongside Aaron Bradshaw or Ugo, with DJ
Justin Edwards at the three,
DJ Rob, Justin Edwards. You know, I think Chris would be a hell of a four there. Or if Justin's not ready, or you know, Rob, whatever, I don't know. I think that there would be some opportunities there for Chris, and I hope that he sees that. I don't know. I'm not convinced, and I'd love to be wrong on that one, but I have to see it to believe it. Tight ball.
And I hope he doesn't try and go pro because he's nowhere near the draft boards right now. He'd really have to have a big resurgence in the back half of the season. I mean, even, he's starting, but he's really only playing about 18 or 20 minutes a game over the last, you know, however many games that UK's been winning. Like, he's starting the games, but he's coming out after 4 minutes and he's not closing the games. So I think, you know, that's a tell of where he's, of where Kentucky views him as well. He would 1000% serve, you know, or do better if he came back for another year, whether that's in Kentucky or somewhere else, I don't think really matters. I think he'll thrive regardless because he'll just be a guy that just gets better over time and having that experience, and he'll learn a little bit more. So people are mentioning a lot about the Bryce Hopkins situation. You know, that wouldn't shock me, I guess. I mean, Keon Brooks is kind of doing the same thing, but those guys, they're putting up good numbers. Keon's are a little, maybe, you know, not what they appear to be on the surface, but
very inefficient.
Yeah.
Very.
So it, you know, he can go and do that and he'll probably rise up the draft boards a little bit. I would love to see him come back to UK for another year. I think, like you just said, having him actually be the small ball forward, just because some of those forwards are going to be gone, or, you know, might be gone. I guess we'll have to see how those, all that plays out, because I guess technically Oscar, Lance, and Jacob can all come back for another year. So, you know, Jacob, I'm sure, wants to get drafted. Well, I don't know where he's not really on draft boards either. So there's going to be a lot of.
I'd be shocked if he's back as well.
Do what?
I'd be very shocked if he was back as well.
And Jacob's back. Yeah. And I think I would be too. I would see him. I could see Jacob going pro and really doing a bet on yourself type thing. And I think that'd be a little different than Chris's situation, just because I think Toppin, he's already shown that he has some of the attributes that a lot of NBA teams like, and they'll be able to work out some of his, you know, shooting that dumb 16 footer all the time. And they'll be able to work some of that stuff out. So there's a lot there to like with Jacob right now, more than there is with Chris on the NBA side, but that's a whole different conversation that I'll not get into.
Connor Riggs says only players coming back from this year's team are CJ, Adu, Lance, Ugana. Do you think Reeves comes back?
I would.
Reeves. Okay. I hate to continue to bring this up, and I know it's, you know,
bring us down, Jack. Tear us down.
I really am interested to see what happens with Rob Dillingham. I am. And there are various reasons for that. Maybe, and again, I'd love to be wrong on that one.
Who would you rather have?
And that's, I think might end up being maybe a question that we actually have to ask ourselves. And I think if something were to happen with Rob, I think that would be a pretty clear path for Antonio Reeves to come back and be a hell of a super senior. I mean, that would be a guy.
All ACC player.
So the issue with this recruiting class, and we've talked about it extensively, is DJ is not a great shooter. Rob is better as the kind of catch and shoot guy, but he does not finish well in the slightest. They kind of complement each other in that way. Mm-hmm. If Rob, something were to happen, I hope I'm wrong. If something were to happen with Rob, you could slide Antonio in, who is a dynamic three-level scorer and can be that elite three-point shooter, alongside DJ, where DJ can be your crafty finisher around the rim. Antonio can be your go-to three-level scoring threat at the two. And then you have Justin Edwards, who is kind of that versatile wing that Cal has been really missing for a minute. I mean, Justin Edwards is kind of the guy that Cal recruited back in the day, the Jaylen Brown mold, when he went on that run of just not being able to land any threes. I remember it was like a 4-year stretch where Cal just could not land, you know, I think it was after Michael Kidd Gilchrist, he just could not land that elite three. And Justin is that guy. He fits that mold to a T, that dynamic two-way versatile threat. I think he's going to be a perfect plug-and-play guy. And then at the four, depends on who you talk to and what you're looking for. I think they're going to try Aaron Bradshaw at the four. I think they're going to try to make him a face-up guy and put Ugo at the five. I don't envision Oscar coming back. He's still technically able to, but I don't know. I think there was a kind of a bigger possibility this past offseason when he was kind of falling in love with the NIL numbers and thinking, oh, my God, I'd be able to make a fortune if he came back for another year. But I think reality might end up hitting him that the basketball clock is ticking and it's time for him to take that next step. That's my gut as of right now, that he ends up leaving. And I'm a bit concerned about the four and five with Aaron Bradshaw and Ugo at the five, but maybe that ends up working out. But again, that's why Chris Livingston would be perfect in that spot where you could stagger Aaron Bradshaw and Ugo and let Chris Rock out at that fourth spot and let him kind of have the Jacob Toppin role this year, where he can do whatever he wants. And that, I mean, you tell me that Jacob Toppin isn't helping his case right now, the last stretch of games, showing that inside out, knocking down three, a couple threes here and there, showing that face up games, turnaround jump shot, you know, dynamic inside out game. Like, I mean, why would Chris not look at that and go, huh, okay, I could kind of see myself getting the keys at that position and taking over. That's my opinion, but I'm not Chris Livingston, so we'll have to see how that one goes. But your thoughts on just the kind of recruiting class next season, how that is going to unfold?
My only big concern is going to be some of the backcourt issues with DJ and Rob, like on defense. You know, those are a lot two smaller guards that maybe don't bring it every single possession. That can obviously change when they get to college and are in that setting, but that would be my biggest issue with those two guys sharing a backcourt together. And that's why I do think having Reeves and CJ both coming back would be huge. Because I think if you have both those guys come back, either Cal will roll with a three-guard lineup, or it'll be one of Rob or DJ in, and then one of CJ and Antonio in. And that kind of helps a lot of some of the shooting issues that we're seeing this year. So Bradshaw the four, not a huge fan of, to be honest. Don't like that at all. I really like Aaron at the five. I think just him having him ball hawk the rim, go up for lobs. If he wants to shoot threes, like, I'm fine with that. But he's not a guy that I really am like hard pressed on spreading the floor with him. I know he can shoot it. So it'll just be a matter, I guess, of whether or not Cal wants him to. Yeah, having Justin out there is really going to change things a lot too. You can put him at the three or even the four if you want to. Connor even just said it right as I mentioned the four. So good call, Connor, there. I don't have too many more thoughts about that class. Right, it's so many moving pieces at this point that it's going to be tough to really figure out the lineup and the rotations and everything until we know exactly who's coming back and who's leaving.
Yeah, and there are some comments and questions about, you know, the Rob thing and it's just too early to tell, and I think there's just a lot going into it that I would expect. Like, I am expecting him to make it to campus. I that is my gut as of right now, but I don't think it's 100%. I do think that there are some different variables at play, and I do think that the staff still anticipates him to make it to campus and everything be fine. And maybe it does, and maybe he comes in and he plays his butt off, and he's the entertaining human highlight reel alongside DJ Wagner, and then it is as exciting as it sounds on paper, and as highlights may indicate. But I just think that it's a lot deeper than just X player signs with X program and makes it to campus, and everything works out just fine. And I think there is just a lot more going on, and we'll have to see how that goes. But there was somebody that brought.
I want a question for you. I want to put you on the spot with a tough question. What do you think is more likely, that Rob Dillingham plays for UK next year, what is it more likely that he doesn't play for UK, or that he makes the All SEC freshman team?
I think it's more likely that he does not play a second for Kentucky than he becomes in all SEC threat at Kentucky.
That's a very open-ended question, but I wanted you to be on record.
I mean, look, it's a long list of moving parts with Rob Dillingham that I just wait and see. But you asked for my honest opinion, and that's where I am leaning right now. And it's unfortunate, because I think he has all the talent in the world, and I would love to see him coached by John Calipari, and that's what I'm rooting for. And I would love to be wrong, and I'd love for it to work out, and people go, you're worrying for no reason, you're a moron. I'd love for that to happen.
It looks like some people are kind of asking the situation, what do you want to – some people might not know exactly what we're talking about with Rob, but not necessarily eligibility concerns, but more just – you know, there's a lot of extra stuff with Rob that goes on behind the scenes that, you know, with the OTE stuff, and there's a lot of things going on.
Well, I just think it's a lot of movement, a lot of, you know, he got to overtime And I was told that he loved how things were going initially for the first couple of weeks and then just hated it. And then was like, man, I don't like this. And then they had to kind of talk him off the ledge a little bit and say, all right, no, let's hold in tight. There was some talk about him wanting to leave. And, you know, I've talked about this on the show that he was very strongly considering enrolling in January. And I think there was even a conversation with UK where it was like, man, you've been bouncing around high schools. Like, we need to, you committed to something. Let's ride this out and let's follow through with the commitment that you made to that program. And they, like we've talked about on the show, they're trying to build kind of that bridge with Overtime and see what kind of connection they can have. They like the way they're developing kids down there and the, you know, just the program in general. It's a good school. It's a good, you know, kind of college feel where you have classes right next door to where the basketball facility is, and you, it's a campus, and it makes a lot of sense why Kentucky would want that to kind of be a pipeline moving forward. So they don't want to burn that bridge and say, oh yeah, come on in January and let's do that and burn that bridge before you even really start. So they wanted him to kind of take a step back and go, all right, learn. And I think that has turned around a little bit, and it's not as bad as it was there for a while, but it's just, there's just a lot more than, and I can't even talk a lot more about it, but I think just a very surface level, it's, you know, a long history of wishy-washiness that I think could come back to bite in the butt down the road. We'll see. Let's go to any other questions, see if we can get off that topic there for a little while. Who would you say comes back next year? Lance at the four. I'd like to see Lance come back, and I think that they have embraced him. You know, he's embraced this role, and he has embraced, you know, the program has obviously embraced him. The coaching staff has obviously embraced him for what he's providing. I just do get curious about Lance, if his role and how he's being used right now, Zach, if there's ever an itch with him to go to a Boston College or go to a Providence or somewhere, you know, up in the Northeast that, you know, he's from, that's where he's from. And, you know, just to go get an itch to where he could go somewhere smaller and average 15-8 a game, you know, yeah. does he want to be that guy, or does he want to be kind of I don't see him growing into a Nick Richards type of draft prospect ever. And again, I'd love to be wrong, but just me talking honestly, that's my gut with him. I think he would be kind of a lifer enforcer role with what he has right now, and they're clearly recruiting in ways that indicate that they feel the same way. They wouldn't be recruiting Aaron Bradshaw and Ugo to come in and be the kind of main guys at the center position if they were expecting a major significant jump from Lance, where, you know, he was going to be an all SEC type of talent. So I think if he's content with that role forever, then I'd love to have him for forever and have him be that 8 to 13 minute per game type of guy in Lexington till his eligibility runs out. But I get curious if something will scratch, you know, that scratch will need to be scratched, and he'll go, you know what, or that itch will need to be scratched, and he'll go, you know what, maybe I would like to go somewhere closer to home and put up numbers. What are your thoughts on that one?
Yeah, I wouldn't blame Lance one bit if he decided to. And, you know, if I'm a guy like Shaheen Holloway, Seton Hall, you know, who's from, was at St. Peter's, that was right next to, you know, Camden, where, you know, Lance Ware was, like, if I'm Shaheen Holloway, I'd try and go get a guy like Lance. Like, you know, I don't know how the inner workings of the transfer portal work behind the scenes, but, like, that's a guy that you could come in and make your immediate starter at center, and he'd put up probably like a 12-8 or average, something like that. So it's really just going to come down to, does Lance want that? You know, like you said, he's found a home here. He's been here for years. He's got another Camden boy coming in. He's, you know, he's known for a long time. So, you know, UK's even still trying to recruit another Camden kid. And, you know, if you're UK, you'd like to keep as many Camden kids on the roster as you can to help that recruitment pitch. So, it's just going to come down to, does Lance want more? I don't think he's ever going to be an NBA draft prospect. You know, he could easily prove me wrong. Nick Richards already had his sort of resurgence at this point and proved that he was worth, you know, what he was. But Nick Richards is also 7 feet tall and can block a lot of shots. Lance has proven that his big thing is he's our enforcer. He's UK's enforcer. He's the guy that's going to be tough, and he'll come in there and get rebounds. He's probably going to miss a couple 3-footers. But, you know, he brings things that a lot of guys, that teams just don't have and a lot of teams need. So if he wants to go out and get 12-8 somewhere to, you know, a high mid-major or something like that, I wouldn't blame him one bit. I don't think fans should blame him one bit for that. But I think UK would be better off if he returned for sure.
Yeah, and I would definitely lean him coming back. It's just something in the back of my mind that I think about where it's like, you know, maybe he does have that itch and says, you know what, screw it. I'd like something fresh. And Darrell Williams brings up that there is a lot of value in going to one school and graduating from one school. And, I 100% agree. That would be really cool on his end. And I'd love to see him be a lifer here in Lexington. He's certainly got the fan support and he's definitely a fan favorite. So that'd be awesome. Nathan Stout, do you think Reed is the best shooter coming in? Absolutely. I guess the only competition would really be Rob. I think for my money, Reed's the better shooter. And DJ's an okay shooter, definitely not a great shooter. Justin's kind of, back and forth at times. It's not even that close, really. I think Reed is a very good shooter, and I think he'll be a very good college shooter as well. So definitely in that regard. And then, Zach, you get your thoughts on this one. Yeah, says Trey Johnson this weekend. Are they rolling out the red carpet? Yes, they are. And he has become a huge need for this program, unfortunately, because of how things unfolded with Ian Jackson. How important is this visit coming up this weekend, Zach, getting Trey Johnson on campus? It's a big game matchup against Kansas. I know the staff is very excited about him coming in. I think they understand the need for this visit to be a huge one and kind of make up some ground, because I do think the pro route and some of the local Texas schools are probably leading for him right now. But how important is this visit for the program, and what do you like about Trey's game?
Well, it's a lot more important today than it was maybe 7 or 8 days ago, that's for sure. So they definitely, Trey's probably at the top of their recruiting board now. They would have liked to have been able to have Ian on board and maybe help that pitch a little bit. So it's going to be a little bit more tough, I think. Having a winning streak coming in, if you really want to roll out the red carpet, winning 3 games going into it, or 4, I guess, if they can beat Vanderbilt tomorrow, would really, really help the pitch. Talking about some of the guys that are whoever they're trying to target, elsewhere. I think I've even said before that I wouldn't be shocked if a couple of these 24 kids who are in the, low 4 stars really break out and become – top level guys that UK starts to go after. So, but in the sense of where we are right now, this is probably, one of the biggest rollouts that they've had since DJ and Aaron came, and Aaron did for whenever that was Big Blue Madness. So they really need this visit to go well for him and put themselves back in competition for a guy like Trey, who's arguably the best shooter, maybe of the 23 and the 24 class. I don't know if we want to stretch it out to the 25 class as well. But he's really, really good just shooting from anywhere outside. I mean, he can go 4 or 5 feet behind the line too. He's really, really good at that. So it'll be a big, big weekend to have him in, just basketball-wise, recruiting, or even football-wise. I got a lot of big recruits coming in this weekend. So it's just going to be a big, big red carpet event all around for the program or the university this weekend.
MC says, make sure our players don't pull a Tyler Hansbrough and refuse to say hi to Trey.
Yeah. Everyone go say hi at the lunch table, that's for sure.
Everybody make sure you go say hi to Trey. Connor Riggs says, I know the 2024 class is bad, but how good is the 2025 class? It is sensational. It's a really, really good class, and that might be Kentucky's hope right now. I know we talked about Darren Peterson in the last show and the importance of getting him from 2025. He is a New Jersey scholar kid. For my money, I think he's going to end up reclassing and being a top three kid in the 2024 class. So I do think that kind of unofficially he's among the top, I think, along him. And I think it's probably him, Trey Johnson, and Boogie Flan maybe in a tier just slightly below. I think Trey and Darren Peterson at the very top of that priority list. And I think Boogie Flan's right below, but still a very, very significant priority for the program. But I know that 2025, Zach, class, I know you're in love with that one. Other names to throw out there. The staff loves Koa Pete, a kid that I personally love as well. I saw him on the 3SSB circuit playing for the Compton Magic, and he was sensational, kind of a mini Paolo Banchero, kind of a football body. His family is loaded with football, talents, NFL players, and I think there are times that he, probably would be better suited having 3 fingers in the dirt and coming off the outside and sacking the quarterback. But he's also a dominant basketball player in his own right as well, and I think he'd be an amazing fit at Kentucky. And I know, obviously, Cooper Flagg, I highly doubt that he'll ever play a minute of college basketball. I think he's the best at non-Victor Wembanyama talent in the world right now. And I think he might go pro sooner than people are expecting. I wouldn't be shocked if he, you know, leaves Montverde and goes plays for the New Zealand Breakers or something for, a couple years before going to the NBA, because he's that good. And he kind of could be like a Luka Doncic, go play pro while you're 15, 16, 17 years old before going to the NBA. I would not be shocked in that regard. And then the Boozer Twins, Kentucky is going to explore that route. They either obviously Cameron is very, 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 very good. And I think that everybody's kind of penciling them in at Duke for obvious reasons, with their dad being Carlos Boozer, who is a great at Duke. And I think they're going to keep that option open and see what happens. But I don't think he'll end up at Kentucky. Who do you like in that 25 class, Zach? And are there any kind of must gets for the program in your eyes?
I think it's still a little bit early, I guess, for me to sit here and say the guys that I like the best. But I remember watching Coa Pete at I had to watch him online, obviously, for the USA national stuff with him and Cooper Flagg playing up 2 years, I guess, technically. Both those kids looked like they could play college basketball that day. Cooper especially can play, like you said, he could probably hold his own like in the NBA right now, come off the bench playing 10 minutes. Like the kid he's just supremely talented and has insane basketball IQ. Is really the big thing with him is a lot of guys just naturally have really good basketball IQ, and he's one of those guys, and it's just only going to get better for him. Cameron Boozer is obviously really, really good. He's going to be a great NBA player, especially if he can – I remember he was shooting threes at Hoop Hall, and I was like, if he's shooting threes and making threes, he'll be better than his dad was. And his dad was a two-time All-Star, 15-year veteran. So, if Darren Pearson stays in that class, he's obviously the key guy, I think, that they've honed in on. There's a lot of other guys. I can't think of any names off the top of my head, unfortunately. But
we went through the main ones at minimum.
Yeah. So there's a lot of talent there, and that'll be if Cal wants to get a super class, that's the one where you shoot for, because that would be a real. You get 4 or 5 stars from that class, and you're actually that will rival a real Calipari class from his early times.
Yeah, I completely agree. Let's kind of start switching gears back and ramping the show down, but. Switching back to the current team, I know it's always a blast answering questions from the fans. I always appreciate the feedback. There were a bunch of good ones today, especially, so appreciate that. There was somebody that reached out to my DMs on Twitter. I want to make sure I get their name they asked about just this current team's tournament ceiling right now and what the seeding could kind of turn out to be right now. Zach, if things go... Obviously, if the wheels don't fall off, assuming they continue this path, obviously they're probably not going to go undefeated the rest of the way. But if they continue a path of continued steps up and moving forward, are you kind of envisioning in your mind of what this team can be and what their tournament ceiling is going to be? It's Kyle Woeful just on Twitter reached out, said, what's the realistic ceiling for this team in regards to the NCAA seeding? So your thoughts on that one.
If they continue, continue with the trajectory that they're on, and they keep utilizing this basketball Benny lineup that we've nicknamed it, and they continue to open the floor, and they just kind of let the game dictate itself and don't try and dictate the game. I think all those are just playing into Kentucky's strengths right now. The schedule is still kind of tough. Like you've got Kansas coming up. They've lost two in a row, so that'll be interesting to see with them. But then you've got Tennessee, you got Arkansas, Auburn. Or Arkansas twice, I think, on here. So there's a lot of tough games left. Luckily, those games will really help build the resume if they can, steal a couple of those. Luckily, a lot of these games that are left over, like you got Ole Miss and Georgia, are really the only two, that really probably won't help you too much in the seeding. Vanderbilt will be kind of an iffy game. But if they continue doing what they're doing, I think they've got maybe 10, 12 games left. If they win 8 or 9 of those, I think they're firmly, in a 6-7-5 seed area. If you can make a run in the SEC tournament, as we've seen in the past, sometimes the SEC tournament doesn't even matter to seeding at all. So if they can steal, maybe, beat Kansas and then, sweep Tennessee, I think you're looking at moving yourself back into the top 5-ish seed category. And then from there, it's all going to be wide open. I can see Kentucky easily making an Elite Eight Final Four run just as easy as I could see them bowing out in the second round to, you know, some 10 seeds. So I don't think really this could be one of those tournaments where seeding might just not matter that much. If you can get in the Louisville region, I guess that's really all that would matter, is you try and just be as close to home as possible. I don't see them getting higher than like a 3 or a 4 seed at this point. Even if they do, you know, if they run the table, I think obviously they're going to shoot way back up there, but I just don't see that happening. They're going to drop a game or two. That's just how basketball works. But like, as Martin Robert here could see them win the SEC tournament, I could easily see this team winning the SEC tournament because they've already proven they can beat one of the better teams in Tennessee. Still got to go through Alabama, I guess. And that's kind of the juggernaut right now. But the ceiling is like it's raising. The ceiling is going up each game, and I guess that's really what the big takeaway.
Yeah, I don't know how much you can say the floor is going up yet, because the floor was literally as low as it could possibly be against South Carolina. So it's still,
we know the floor. The floor
they're getting better, but it's still not fair to say the floor is very high. I think that it still could bottom out and the wheels could fall off if they don't go with the efficient lineups and they try to, you know, put that square peg in a round hole to close out the year, as we saw to begin the year. I think we're starting to see that ceiling start creeping back up and what it could be. With the pieces that this team has and the shooting and the rebounding and the defense and just the spacing and the ball handling and all that. I mean, when you put all of the things together, the reasons why we were so frustrated at the beginning of the year is because we know the talent has always been there. And there are some questions, you know, is this team even really that talented? I think the last two games, the second half of the last two games has proven that, yeah, the talent is there. And I think we haven't even seen them play at their best. I think we're still waiting to see them kind of hit that next level. And I think that's what's so exciting. And I'm waiting for that breakthrough moment. I'm waiting for that Tennessee at home that we saw last year, where they just started hitting everything they threw at the rim and rebounding the way they did and defending the way they did. And I would not be shocked if we get a 100-70 win at some point in the very near future. And that's when we could start getting really excited. I still need to see it to believe it. It's still baby steps toward that, but at least we're getting closer. And that's definitely what, where that excitement stems from.
If you want to start making statements, it's tomorrow. You go into Vanderbilt and you beat that team by 15, 20 points. I mean, we're going to preview Vanderbilt for a second here, shortly, I'm sure, but
yeah.
Vanderbilt, they've got a very weird SEC schedule so far. Like, they've beaten good teams, they've lost to bad teams. So, if you can go into that team and just spank them and wipe them away real quick, that would be, you know, that's when I can see a real season turnaround type. Like, winning close games is nice, and you want to be able to I just read Matt Sack's comment in there that made me laugh. Now I don't remember what I was saying. Damn it, Matt. It was a good comment there, though. But it's Vanderbilt. So you come in there and you just spank that team. That's, I want to see them just beat a team down. They really haven't had that since the non-conference play. If you can come in and just spank that team, I think that would be a real statement and breakthrough. And then we could start talking about, okay, now where's the ceiling? You know, now do we move forward? And obviously you got the Kansas game Saturday. That one's turning into a little bit less exciting than it would have been, I guess, with their recent losses. But they've got opportunities coming up where you can make back-to-back statements here this week and really continue this upward trajectory.
Yeah, Matt Sack said Jack Pilgrim's chest day routine, gym routine. Today was leg day, actually. So thanks. It was squats
and calves, baby.
Squats in Bulgarians. If I was not in farmers carries was today. I hate leg day. It's my least favorite. So you get chest day whenever we. I think that'll be like Wednesday or something. But
we'll need the scoop then.
Anyway. Prediction for tomorrow night. I know we got to start wrapping this thing up, but. How are you feeling? Right? Do you feel like they'll be able to continue to take these steps forward for Vanderbilt?
I do. Because like I said, I think Vanderbilt's kind of an up-and-down team. You just kind of got to catch them on the right night, I guess, or wrong night, depending on how you want to look at it. Vanderbilt's tough, though. Like, they don't – I think if I can just cheat real quick and look at some of their scores in the SEC play, they only lost to Tennessee by 9 on the road. They beat the same South Carolina team that beat Kentucky. It was in overtime, but then they beat Georgia by a few, only lost to Alabama by 12, which in comparison to Kentucky looks a lot different, beat Arkansas as well. So they have weird results, you know, over the last few weeks in their SEC plays. So I don't think Kentucky will go in and just spank that team because I think Vanderbilt has enough talent overall to just keep it close. They're not just the fighting Scottie Pippen Juniors this year. They actually have like a little bit of depth around and guys that can score and contribute. I think they've got a really big, like 7'1" guy in there who can create some problems. So having it on the road too never helps. You know, Vandy's not a fun place to play in. But from our perspective, I do feel good. I think Kentucky's riding high. I would not be shocked at all if Kentucky gets off to a slow start and is down by 6 or 7 or 8 at the half again and then comes back and figures Vandy out in the second half. I think I don't want to say that that's how this team might just operate the rest of the way, but it wouldn't shock me at all if they're just a slow burn type thing where it takes until the second half for them to figure out what the other team's throwing at them and then they break it down and exploit it. Because we've seen over the last few games that they just have – Kentucky has players that are smart enough to figure that out, and they're not trying to do too much like they kind of were at the beginning of the season. Like, you know, Jacob Toppin's not just going to go in there and fire up a bad shot. He's going to think about it for a second, and he's going to see if Oscar's open. If he's not, he's going to swing it back. Like, they're playing a lot different than they were a few weeks ago. So I would predict, you know, if we're making score predictions, I'm sure we will here. So I might as well – I'll say this game goes 79-70 Kentucky.
Martin Robert, cats are long overdue for breakout shooting performance, maybe in Vandy's silly gym. I love the optimism, Martin. And then my guy, BBN MJ, says Vandy always plays us tough, no matter how bad they are record-wise. I agree. They always play us tough. Jerry Stackhouse is, a little overrated coaching-wise. I know people like his suits, and he always looks incredible on the sidelines, but still as a coach, I still think he's definitely a wait and see guy if he's the actual answer. I think it is a huge hit thing that Vandy will be without Liam Robbins tomorrow night. I think that's somebody that would have made up, I think, a big impact there in the front court, and probably would have led to a better shooting performance for the Cats, and definitely a better emphasis on the perimeter. But I think Oscar may end up having a little bit of a field day down low, and it could be definitely a physical kind of grinded out type of game, which definitely would not lead to probably a blowout in that regard, but it still could lead to a pretty solid win down in Nashville. Definitely looking forward to that one. We've gone over a little bit, so let's go on and get out of here unless there are any last second
questions. We didn't touch about there was a bracketology about Kentucky.
Oh, right. What do you think of that? The latest update was Kentucky versus Duke is a 7-10 matchup in the opening round. I have a hard time envisioning the NCAA tournament committee would do something like that for an opening round. But could you imagine the numbers on that thing? And that opening round matchup.
And that would be the reason to do it, you know, because I think they even mentioned it, Matt Jones and them on the radio this morning, that you're not going to get a bigger first round draw in tournament history than Kentucky Duke as a 7-10 seed in, you know, where would they even be playing? Albany or something like that. So that would, I mean, especially Kentucky and Duke fans alike, I know Duke fans aren't known to travel very well, but Kentucky fans would absolutely travel for that. Like, wherever that game is held, you better make sure it's a 25,000 people gym because it would be packed no matter what, if Kentucky's are the 7 or the 10 seed. So I don't see it happening, and 0% chance, because I think the tournament thinks in terms of longevity, I guess. They would rather see that matchup in like the Sweet 16 or the Elite 8.
And because opening round matchups are like the first round of March Madness always gets stupid
exactly.
Numbers, no matter who is playing, you know. So I think they would want to maximize that, because unfortunately, if you get an Elite 8 matchup of Loyola Chicago versus Providence or whatever, you know, something stupid, the numbers are going to be low in that game, because it's like, the appeal of the March Madness is over now, and who really cares about watching that Elite 8 matchup or Sweet 16 or whatever. If you get Duke, Kentucky, and really anywhere in the NCAA tournament, but later on in the later rounds, all hell will break loose. But it still would be pretty fascinating to see how that would unfold in the opening round as a 7-10. I'm hoping that Kentucky is better than a 10, and even Duke probably better than a 7. And it, you know, they are one of the premier teams when March does come around. So I'm rooting against that, because that would mean that Kentucky ended the season better than they started and wouldn't be just a 10. So yeah. Fingers crossed. It starts tomorrow night, then it starts on Saturday against Kansas. Big matchup there as well. Big two-game stretch for the Cats. Just double checking there are any aren't any last second questions for us. I think we are good. Let me get one last message from our new friends at MyBookie. It's a new year. So give yourself a fresh start with MyBookie, whether you bet to earn or to make the games more exciting. MyBookie gives you the most for your money with their redesigned deposit bonus. Just use promo code KSR. Today it has to be KSR. Usually it's sources say either of them will work, but for today we're just going to do the KSR on a deposit of $50 or more to receive a cash bonus instantly to your MyBookie account. Using this bonus is simple. Bet your deposit amount just once and you are ready to cash out. It's no strings attached with MyBookie. Bet on the NFL, UFC, or play for a share of big cash prizes in the weekly online blackjack tournaments. Zach, I know you're a big NBA guy. NBA is all over it and definitely my personal favorite to use for that. So make sure if you are an NBA fan, use that for that. With so many brands to choose from, you need a platform that makes it simple to bet and win like MyBookie. Bet anything, anytime, anywhere with MyBookie. Zach, a great time. Appreciate you coming on. As always, we always have a blast whenever we do this. So real quickly, where can fans find your work?
They can find me, as always, at a great website by the name of KentuckySportsRadio.com. Shout out to our folks at On3 for giving us that spot. Or you can follow me on Twitter at, I forgot my Twitter for a second, at ZGagan, KSR. Gagan is G-E-O-G-H-E-G-A-N, the triple G, or it's even right up there now. You can see it up there.
You can find me on Twitter as well, at Jack Pilgrim KSR. Reach out to me via email, jpilgrim@KentuckySportsRadio.com. It's been a blast. A lot of people reaching out through the DMs and my mentions and things like that. So it's always great for the feedback. I love all the interaction with BBN. Tonight was great. There's so many comments, so many questions that came in. You guys were a blast. Always love the feedback. Always love the interaction with BBN. You guys are the best. Thank you for your continued support, your continued listening and watching. Make sure you subscribe to the KSR YouTube channel. Wherever that button is. I don't even know if I have one here, or subscribe below. There we go. Do that, and we'll be back next time for the Jam Packed Sources Say podcast. We will see you then.